Welcome to the Tech and Main Presents podcast with your host, Sean St. Hill. Sean is the CEO of Tech and Main, a technology consulting firm in Atlanta, Georgia. Listen in as thought leaders share their tips and insights about what's going on in the world of technology. And now, here's your host, Sean St. Hill.
Thank you for joining another episode of Tech and May Presents, where we bring you the best insights from today's leaders and experts in technology. Today, we will be speaking with Nick Foy. Nick is the founder and CEO of Silverdale Tech. Nick, welcome to the Tech and May Presents podcast.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And so, Nick, with that introduction, my friend, why don't you jump in and share your background with our audience?
Sure, absolutely. So, as you can probably tell from my accent, I am originally from Scotland. And of course, what that means is my first job I had was at a whiskey distillery. And believe it or not, I worked for Glenmorangie for 6.5 years. For most of my time, I was actually an official whiskey taster, believe it or not.
Oh, so, that sounds amazing.
Yes. And it was my first proper job after leaving school. And there's some days I look back and I go, why can't I just go back and taste whiskey all day? That was a great job. Why did I leave? But that was a long time ago now. But that was my first real job. And it's interesting because that job really got me to where I am today when I look back on my career, because what I was doing at Glenmorangie back in the day was a lot of problem solving and really taking a different look at a problem that, quite frankly, the business didn't even know existed at the time. And that really has been a stream right throughout my career, through Glenmorangie to logistics and supply chain, working for Capgemini as a consultant, and then also working at Amazon for a long time as well. And then doing a couple of C-level roles and then starting my own company 3 years ago here at Silverdale.
Okay. And so, Nick, that's actually a wonderful segue. Thank you for sharing your background with us. You're there at Silverdale Tech, and I'm curious, as I'm sure our audience is, what would you say is the thing that you enjoy most about work?
I guess most about my daily work is I love joining the dots. And as a kid, one of my favorite activities was sitting there doing the join the dot exercises. And I really still enjoy doing that today. And what I mean by that is clients will come to us with a problem, right? And they explain, hey, I've got a problem with reconciling my balance sheet, for example. And what's interesting is when we start going backwards in that process, okay, well, let's take a look at your inventory valuation. Oh, your inventory valuation is not correct. Okay, now why is that? Let's look at your ins and your outs. Then we start looking at pricing, vendor pricing, purchase orders, contacts, taxes. You start unraveling this stuff and you really start to join the dots all the way through. And when you do that and you can kind of demonstrate this to a client using visual tools, using data, using real world examples from their system that we find, it's really great when you see the client's eyes suddenly light up and go, aha, now I understand it. I don't have a problem with the balance sheet. What I have is a problem with my tax setup, or I have a problem with my pricing setup, my vendor, my purchase order process. That's what my problem is. And seeing that is really, really rewarding for me.
Oh, that's great. And so let's find out a little bit more about those clients, those customers that you just mentioned. So I'm a potential client and I'm looking at Silverdale Tech. What issue am I bringing to you? What are some of the things your clients are coming to you asking for help with?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And there tends to be kind of two buckets, I would say, of questions that people come to us with. The first one is we are an official partner of Odoo. Most of our work is in the Odoo system. And so about half of our work comes from customers who already have Odoo and have either done it themselves, or they've used another partner, or they've started a project and it hasn't gone very well. And we call those Odoo rescues. And generally speaking, how that starts is a client reaches out to us with a very simple question, and then, you know, it turns into something else and something else. And then we say, well, who did this implementation and where are you in your project? And suddenly the tears start and the wailing starts, and people start to break down a little bit and say, it's a nightmare. We started this 2 years ago. We haven't gone live yet, or we don't know what we're doing. Well, the guy who did it has left and we're a bit stuck. We don't know what to do next. That tends to be kind of half of our business really comes from that kind of rescue situation where people are really at the end of their tether in a lot of cases because they can't get things done or not sure what to do next. So we help those clients by doing an initial audit, and we give them a program of, okay, here's what we need to do to get you back on track. And we give them a very clear roadmap of what to do, how to do it, when to do it. And that, first of all, understanding that audit is a great thing to get them off the ceiling and to show them that, hey, it's okay. We'll get you to the other end. So that's enormously helpful. Then we help them to get it done. Other half of our business tends to be clients who either don't have an ERP system at all. They're using Excel or Google Sheets, or they're using a combination of Constant Contact and SurveyMonkey and QuickBooks and a lot of Excel. And those clients come to us, they tend to be a lot smaller, and that's okay for us because we genuinely believe that every business of every size deserves access to the best ERP system in the world. And it's our job to help them get there regardless of the budget. Those types of customers come to us with very, very interesting point questions. Things like, how do I manage my inventory? And it sounds like such a simple question. If someone's been managing inventory for years, well, people kind of go, what are you talking about? How do you manage inventory? But for a lot of customers of ours, sometimes they've grown, you know, exponentially. And now they're having to start thinking about things like, how do I use barcodes? How do I put things on a shelf? How do I pick things efficiently? How do I make sure I prioritize things in the right order? How should I receive product? How should I pay my vendors? So we get some of those, what sound like really trivial questions to people who've been in business for a long time. But for a lot of our customers, these really point to fundamental ways of how they can grow and scale their business in a sustainable way. And that just isn't there yet for a lot of our customers.
So Nick, a couple of things, you mentioned several things that hit home, but the one that I want to kind of drill down on is, and here's how I'll set it up. Sometimes when I'm talking to founders, tech leaders, et cetera, I'll ask the question, what is your ideal avatar? Right. And they'll say it's a fast growing enterprise, 500 employees, 2 million in revenue, et cetera, et cetera. Right. But I'm very, very curious because you mentioned the willingness to help just about any size client. And so my question to you, sir, is why that oak, I guess is a good way to put it, right? Why not the lower end of the SMB or the fast growing enterprise? Why have open arms for these different size companies, if you will?
I think that's a great question. And it's one of the questions we've asked ourselves a number of times as well. And actually, it comes down to the mission of Silverdale. Our mission is to democratize ERP. Okay. It's as simple as that. But we want to make sure that ERP systems are not just the playground of the big IBMs or the Microsofts of the world. The reality is that integrated ERP systems in the past have been out of reach for businesses unless you're doing at least seven figures. Okay. And the reality is, if you look at the advantages that people can get from an ERP system, I genuinely believe, and that's why it's the mission of Silverdale, that we have to democratize this entire industry. We don't help ourselves, quite frankly. The ERP implementers of the world, I think, have done a very poor job. And we're very happy to give it a lot of smoke and mirrors and make it into some sort of dark art that only certain people have access to. And quite frankly, it's a nonsense. There's some great systems out there, Odoo being one of them, where 80% of what you want to do as a business has already been thought about by someone else. And don't let someone tell you otherwise. So What we tend to do, Sean, is that if you look at, it's probably 70 to 80% of what transactions that a business does, okay, are going to be exactly the same as the business across the street, down the road, in the next town. You buy stuff, you store stuff, you sell stuff, you send invoices, you get paid, you pay your vendors, you reconcile your bank account, you produce a P&L and a balance sheet. Okay, guess what? So does 99.9% of every other business in the world. So what we try and do is we try and focus our clients on, look, don't customize the 70 to 80% of the ERP, okay, that is the same for you as everybody else. Don't customize accounting. Don't customize vendor bills. Don't customize purchasing, right? Focus on what makes you you. Customize and spend your time and effort there. So if you're a rental company, for example, we should spend 80% of our time looking at the rental application and making sure it matches your process and gives your customers value, okay? Not how you pay for replacement tires for a vehicle. Who cares how you do that, quite frankly? And if a business owner comes to us and says, hey, I want to change the P&L. I want to show it this way around instead of that way around. Okay, are you a P&L company? Is that what you sell? No? Great, leave it alone. Okay, leave it alone. Tell me what you sell. Tell me how you do it. Let's go look at those business processes. And that 70 to 80% that's the same as everybody else, leave the damn thing alone. Okay. And trust me, because if you're going to start customizing and, you know, all sorts of standard processes, you will never get there. Okay. You'll just disappear, you know, in a big black hole of customization. And that, my friend, is what this whole ERP implementation industry lives on, is customization. And we try and avoid it like the plague.
So Nick, now there's another string that I want to pull on. And that is the willingness to tell business owner, founder, et cetera, what they need to hear as opposed to what they want to hear. Right? Because, I mean, we've all seen the movie or we've read the book where there's a consultant, there's a third party that's been brought in, and they're in this meeting, and that consultant third party is getting, you know, chewed up side and down the other because the leader's like, you're not producing the results. We hired you to. When really what it is, Nick, is the thing that you just mentioned, which is they're focusing on the wrong thing.
Right? Yeah.
They, like you said, they want to customize P&L, and they're actually a reseller of, you know, athletic apparel or something, right? So having the guts, if you will, to tell that leader, hey, I'm here to help you, right? And here's how I can best help you. Let's go down that trail a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our, we have a set of company tenets that we operate to. And one of our company tenets is that the customer is not always right. Okay. And that's what we're here for. Okay. If the customer was always right, then they wouldn't need us. Right. And sometimes that is about having the backbone to say, no, we think you're going down the wrong route here. This is not going to be the right thing for you long term. And we put our skin in the game on that. Okay. And the way we do that is, first of all, for every client we work with, when we engage with them as if we're going to be with them for the next 20 years. Okay. We're not here to make a quick buck. We're not here to be gone in 6 months after the implementation and wash our hands of it. That's not what we're here for. We're here with that client for the next 20 years. That's the first thing. What that does is internally, it means that our team operates in a very different mindset that, hey, if I do it this way, then, hey, I'm going to support this thing for the next 5 years. I'll make sure I do it right the first time, not just quickly. The other thing that we do, Sean, is that we take our, again, part of our kind of 20-year approach is that whenever we do an ERP implementation for one of our clients, we also offer them free upgrades every 2 years. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Now, that's not just some sort of marketing gimmick, right? That puts us on the hook, okay, to make sure that everything we do is sustainable, upgradable, okay, as easy upgradable as possible. And what that means is keeping our clients away from heavy customization. So we have a skin in the game to push back on our clients to say, we do not think you should customize this. We think you should use standard, because guess what? I know in 2 years' time, I'm going to have to upgrade this thing. Okay. And I'm going to do it for free. Okay. And so if a client comes back to me and says, no, I really want you to do this thing, then okay, but I'm going to bill you and charge you, okay, as if I'm going to have to do this another 10 times over the next 20 years. And you're going to have to pay for that up front. Now, are you really sure you need that customization? Okay. And it's the, and when we have those conversations, putting the client on the hook to say, are you really sure this is what you want to get focused on? Is this what's going to grow your business? In 5 years' time, when you look at your spend on, you know, your ERP system, is this the one thing you're going to say, oh my goodness, I'm so glad we spent money on that? Is this the thing? If it's not, don't do it. Okay. And a lot of what we do, and this is talking about ERP projects. The problem with ERP projects is, Sean, everybody thinks that they're IT projects. Okay. That's what everyone thinks. It's an IT project. It's not an IT project. Okay. It couldn't be further from the truth. Okay. Only about 20% of the effort in an ERP project is actually technical in any sense. Okay. 30% of the project is business process design, and 50% of the project is people and change management. And unless a client understands that, I don't want to work with them. Okay. If it's a CIO who's leading the project, I don't want to hear you. I don't want to talk to you. Okay. I don't want to talk to CIOs, CTOs about ERP projects. Okay. Because at the end of the day, that's not what makes the difference for our clients. So.
Oh, I love that. What's so refreshing about everything that you've shared is really you are super customer focused, right? But you are customer focused in a way where you are not beholden to the customer, if you will, right? Like, you are so confident in how you deliver ERP implementation and that entire process that you are willing to basically challenge them and say, hey, you don't need the customization that you think you need, right? The last two guys that you've spoken to about this, the last two companies that have come in and set a proposal in front of you, like, I'm here to tell you, you don't need that.
Yeah.
Right. And so that kind of flips things on its head, right? Because again, you are customer focused, but you're customer focused in a way where it's like, you need to trust me. Stay over here.
Yeah. Right?
And let me do what you hired me to do.
Right. Exactly right. Exactly right. And that's part of our challenge, quite frankly, as a company, is to be able to cut through some of that messaging. When we have a client who may well have two or three other, you know, proposals sitting on the table, it's quite difficult for us sometimes to kind of break through that to say, we're not playing the same game as these other guys, right? We're not even on the same ballpark, right, as these guys. Don't compare our price to someone else's. Don't compare our deliverables to someone else's, because guess what? We're not doing the same thing. If they're quoting you in hours and customizations and modules and things like that, that's not how we do it. Now, all of our projects are fixed price. That's another thing that's very different for us versus some of our competition, is that we do three different phases in a project, and we give you prices for each phase. And if it takes us longer, that's on us. If it takes us shorter, then good on us. But at the end of the day, the price is the price is the price. And we're very careful about what we get into and who we work with. And we don't work with every client that knocks on our door, quite honestly. Some clients honestly just aren't ready. They want to customize everything, right? And it's interesting when you said earlier about avatars or customer personas, right? Who's a good fit? It's really interesting. And what we tend to find is that companies with less than, I would say, probably 20 to 25 employees want to customize everything, right? because they're used to doing that in Excel or Google Sheets. And then companies over 250 employees want to customize everything because they're so important and their business is so unique to everybody else. And it's that group in between, that kind of 25 to 250, which I would say is kind of a sweet spot for us. It's not a focus for us, but it's kind of a sweet spot where, you know, the people in that category really realize that we're trying to grow and scale. And that isn't about focusing on the wrong things, but focusing on the right things. And that tends to be a really good sweet spot for us. However, I would say probably half of our clients are less than 25 employees in reality. And the idea is that what we're doing is we're giving them a backbone, a system, a process, mechanisms that will help them become the 250 employee, the 2,500 employee company. Right. That's what we're giving them.
That's good stuff, Nick. That's good stuff. All right. So let's pivot a little bit and let's talk to some of the younger people. And young these days is relative, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, they're look, you talk to some 60-year-olds and they're like, I feel 30. So it truly is relative.
Yep.
But as far as advice for those that are looking at a career in technology, talk to them, Nick. What are you going to share with them?
So I would say there are really three things that I would offer as advice. First of all is curiosity. Be curious, not just about the thing that's in front of you, but what's driving that thing and where is it going next? And don't give up on something too quickly as well, right? Be curious to the point of obsession, right? I think is what I would say on that. Be really curious and be asking lots of questions. Be the five-year-old and asking why all the time. I think that curiosity, I kind of see lacking, quite honestly, a lot of what we're trying to hire for in our company. You ask people questions about, well, why do they want it like that? Oh, I don't know. They just want it. Oh, okay. Go find out why, and then we'll have another conversation. So curiosity, I think, is really important. I think the second thing I would offer as advice as well is kind of tenacity, right? So grab a hold of something and make it happen, right? Be tenacious, be the butcher dog on the back of the meat truck, right? You've got to be that tenacious and get your teeth into something and say, I'm going to deliver this. I'm going to do this. And don't just deliver it, but deliver it with style, right? Deliver it in a way that they're going to remember, right? Not just how it was done, but who did it. So having that tenacity and delivering it with style, I think is really important. And then I think my third piece of advice that I would give to someone is always have a side hustle. Okay. So even if you're working for a big company, working for an Amazon or a Google or a Microsoft, or that's the direction you go, always, always, always have a side hustle. Have something that's yours. Have something you can experiment with. Have something you can test with. Have something that you are really passionate about as well. And I get that some people are going to be passionate about coding for Amazon or whoever, but have something on the side, right? I think it kind of opens you up to new experiences and new ways of thinking that you may not get in your, you know, 9-to-5 job or whatever it may be. But having a side hustle is a great way to learn and grow and experiment.
So curiosity, tenacity,
yeah.
And have a side hustle.
Absolutely.
If you don't mind, I'll piggyback on that last piece. Having a side hustle doesn't necessarily bring tens of thousands of dollars in additional revenue beyond your 9-to-5. It's wonderful.
Yep.
Super dope if you that opportunity, right? And your side hustle is generating that additional income. But let me tell you, like for instance, let's say you work for Amazon, right? And you're in their security operations department, right? Your side hustle could very well be going to your kid's school.
Yeah.
These amazing Fortune 500 companies, they literally have days and some of them have like a week set aside for you to go volunteer, right? You can go to your kid's academy or school and help with their security.
Yeah.
Right. Or I'm just saying like there are so many different ways that we can get involved.
Yeah.
And to your point, have a side hustle where we are contributing
100%.
I love what you said. So,
no, 100%. And actually, for a long time, for 12 years, my side hustle when I was in the UK, is I was actually an officer in the Air Force Reserve in the UK. And I worked with teenage kids in the Air Force Reserve. And it was nothing to do with my day job whatsoever. But the knowledge, the value that I got from that, and I was able to contribute back to it, was amazing. And then the experiences that I had, the people I met, the relationships I made, which I'll always have with me. And it was absolutely nothing to do with, and it's absolutely invaluable. So yeah, 100% of what you're saying, Sean, it doesn't have to be about making extra money. When I say side hustle, that you're absolutely right, that I didn't necessarily mean making lots of money, but getting lots of value from my side hustle.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Awesome. Well, Nick, let's go through these next series of questions here. We're going to find out a little bit more about you personally. And so that first question for you is, name your favorite musician or band.
Yeah. So my favorite band is a band called Dry the River, and they unfortunately disbanded about 8 years ago. So they're not producing any new music, but they're actually one of my favorite bands of all time. I'm also a big fan of Icelandic folk music, believe it or not. And there's some really good vocals out there from Iceland at the moment. And so, yeah, I thoroughly recommend that if anyone's looking for a new genre to reach out into.
Okay. Well, so funny you mentioned Iceland. This is, again, kind of like what we were talking about before we started the podcast. This podcast has allowed me to talk to some amazing people, one of which is actually a gentleman in Iceland. He has a cybersecurity training out of Iceland. So lots of good things come out of Iceland.
Lots of great things coming out of Iceland.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Good stuff. So, Nick, how about a favorite hobby or pastime?
So I'm learning how to play the piano, and I'm also, I've been learning for a long time, and I still put myself in the learning bucket. I don't say I play the piano. I bash the keys every so often, but I actually really enjoy it. Again, it's nothing to do with my day job. I kind of lose myself in it. And that's definitely one of my favorite pastimes.
Okay. All right. How about a favorite place to visit on vacation?
Yeah, London is probably my favorite city. I lived just outside London for 12 years, and you think it had enough of kind of commuting in and out of it. But when you're going to London, not having to commute 9 to 5, it's a great city. I really enjoy being in London. That's definitely my favorite city for a break.
Okay, good stuff. And what teacher at any level has had the greatest impact on?
Yeah, so this is my high school teacher, Mrs. Veach. She was very different to a lot of my teachers. I wasn't very academically minded when I was a kid. However, Mrs. Veach was really good because she encouraged me to do different things, to do practical things. Never let me sit on the sides or, you know, not participate in stuff. She should always get people involved, and she always knew how to talk to you. She talked to you just like an equal, which was almost unheard of back in my day at school. And even now, I still think about Mrs. Veach. Even after 30 years of leaving school, she's had a huge, profound influence on me over the years.
Oh, that's great. So curious, did you ever have a chance to connect with her once you completed your study?
I did. So a couple of times actually since then. And she was always the same. She was always very curious, always very interested in what we're doing and how we're doing it. And so, yeah. And unfortunately, she passed a few years. But yeah, no, she was a lovely lady, and she's probably the only teacher in reality that I really remember from all my years of schooling. And again, it's probably because she talked to me like an equal, which was very rare.
That's good stuff. It's nice to know that you were able to at least stay in contact with her. She's had such a huge
impact. Yeah.
Love that. All right. So Nick, come to our last question. But it's honestly my favorite question. And so we're going to jump in the time machine and we're going to go back to 18-year-old Nick. What is the Nick of today going to tell his 18-year-old self?
My goodness. I think whatever what age am I now? My 47-year-old self went back to 18, told myself, I wouldn't believe any of it. That's the reality. At 18 years old, I was high school in Scotland, barely traveled out of mainland Britain, never mind anywhere else in the world. And if I could just tell my 18-year-old self that you will have worked in 34 different countries, you will have worked for billion-dollar businesses, you will have built a billion-dollar business unit within Amazon in 5 years, you will be involved in some of the most biggest logistical challenges in 1 and 2 hour deliveries. You'll be involved in solving those things. You'll start your own business. You'll live in the US in Seattle. I would never have believed any of it, quite frankly. So I think the only thing I would have said that I probably would have believed when I was 18 is believe in yourself. And that's probably the one thing when I was 18 that I didn't do. And just telling myself, just believe in yourself, it's going to be fine. Go for it.
Nick, as always, good times go by way too quick. You are an amazing person, and I have thoroughly enjoyed this. But before we let you go, what is the best way for people to get in contact?
Yeah, so they can do that through our website at SilverDillTech.com. Or they can reach me through all the usual social channels at Silverdale Tech on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn as well. And they can also find me at nick@nickfoy.com.
Okay, great. And we'll be sure to have that information in the show notes. But again, Nick, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. And just wish you and the team at Silverdale Tech all the best in the future.
Great. Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome. And Tech and Main Presents family, thank you as always for listening. Be sure to tune in next time when we will have another technology expert share their wisdom. Goodbye for now.
You've been listening to another episode of Tech and Main Presents. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Don't forget to tell your friends, and thanks for being a part of the Tech and Main Presents community.